The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians 6, verse 14b, Gird thy loins. Chapter 15, Counsel and comfort to those who are sincere, but drooping, doubting souls, who neither are condemned absolutely in their consciences for hypocrisy, nor fully absolved from the suspicion of it in their own thoughts. We have done with the second sort of persons, those who upon search find their consciences bearing witness for their uprightness. Thirdly, there is a third sort remains yet to be spoken to, and they are doubting souls, who are indeed sincere, but dare not be persuaded to think so well of themselves. They come from the trial which they were desired to put themselves upon, and bring in an ignoramus. We know not whether we be sincere or not. Now, to those I would give these words of counsel, and the Lord give his blessing with them. Section 1. Number 1. Take heed, Satan doth not draw you to conclude you are hypocrites, because you are without the present evidence of your sincerity. To say so were to offend against the generations of God's dear children, many of whom must, if this were a true inference from such premises, pass the same sentence upon themselves. For such precious souls they are, from whose eyes the truth of their grace and sincerity of their hearts is at this day hid, and yet are not without either. The patriarchs had their money all day bound up in their sacks as they traveled, though they did not know this till they came to their end and opened them. Thus there is a treasure of sincerity hid in many a soul, but the time to open the sack and let the soul know its riches is not come. Many are now in heaven, have shot the gulf, and are safely landed there, who were sadly tossed with fears all along their voyage about the truth of grace in them. Faith unfenced puts a soul into the ark, Christ, but it doth not hinder that such a one may be seasick in the ship. It is Christ's work, not grace's, to evidence itself to our eyes so demonstratively as to enable us to own it. Besides an organ fitly disposed, there is required light to irradiate the medium. So, besides truth and grace, it is necessary there be the Spirit, being another light, for want of which the soul is benighted in its thoughts, and must cry for another, and he no other than the Holy Spirit to lead them into the light. This is the great messenger which alone is able to show a man his uprightness. But as the eye may be a seeing eye in the dark, when it doth not see anything, there may be truth of grace where there is not present sense of that truth. Yea, the creature may be passionately hunting from ordinancy to ordinancy to get that sincerity which it already hath, as sometimes you may have seen one seek very earnestly all about the house for his hat, when at the same time he hath it on his head. Well, lay down this as a real truth in thy soul. I may be upright, though at present I am not able to see it clearly. This, though it will not bring in a full comfort, yet it may be some support till that come. As a shore to thy weak house, though it does not mend it, yet it will underprop and keep it standing till the master workman comes, the Holy Spirit, who with one kind word to thy soul is able to set thee right in thy own thoughts, and make thee stand strong on the promise, the only true basis of foundation of solid comfort. Be not more cruel to thy soul, O Christian, than thou wouldest to thy friends, shall I say, yea, thy enemy's body. Should one that darest not much love lie sick in thy house, yea, so sick that if you should ask him whether he be alive, he could not tell you, his senses and speech being both at present gone, would you presently lay him out and coffin him up for the grave, because you cannot have it from his own mouth that he is alive? Surely not. Oh, how unreasonable and bloody then is Satan, who would presently have thee put thyself into the pit hole of despair, because thy grace is not so strong as to speak for itself at present. Section 2. Let me send thee back upon a look once again more narrowly whether Satan, that Joab, hath not the great hand in these questions and scruples started in thy bosom about thy sincerity merely at his last design upon thee, that he may amuse and distract thee from false fears, when thou wouldest not be flattered with false hopes. The time was, though, really worse, and then by his means thou thoughtest thyself better than thou wert. And now, since thou hast changed thy way, disown thy former confidence, been acquainted with Christ, and got some savor of his holy ways in thy spirit, so as to make thee strongly breathe after him. Thou art affrighted with many apparitions of fears in thy sad thoughts, if not charging thee for a hypocrite, yet calling in question the truth of thy heart. It is worth, I say, the inquiring whether it be not the same hand again, the devil, though knocking at another door. No player hath so many several dresses to come in upon the stage as the devil hath forms of temptation, and this a suit, which he very ordinarily hath been known to wear. If it were thy case only, thou mightest have more suspicion, lest these fears should be the just rebukes of thine own heart. But when thou findest many of thy fellow brethren, whose sincerity thou darest not doubt, though thou savest not so much charity for thyself, their complaints so meet with thine, that no key, though made on purpose, can more fit all the wards of a lock than their condition doth thine. This, I say, may well make thee set about another search to find whether he be not come forth a lying spirit to abuse thy tender spirit with such news as he knows worst cannot come to thy ears, that thou dost not love Jesus Christ as thou pretendest deceivest, but thyself to think otherwise. Thus, this foul spirit, like a brazen-faced whore that lies her child at an honest person's door, doth impunitively charge many with that which they are little guilty of, knowing that so much will likely stick of his bold accusation to the poor Christian spirit as such, and shall keep the door open to let in another temptation, which he much desires to convey into his bosom by the favor and under the shadow of this. And it is ordinarily this to scare the Christian from duty and knock off the wheels of his chariot, which used to so often carry him into the presence of God in his ordinances merely upon a suspicion that he is not sincere in them and better stay at home without hearing or joining with God's people in any other duty than go up and show the naughtiness of thy heart, saith the devil. Hath the serpent a smoother skin and a fairer tail when he made Eve put forth her hand to the forbidden fruit? Then he comes within this temptation to persuade the poor Christian not to touch or taste of that fruit, which God hath commanded to be eaten, ordinances, I mean, to be enjoyed by thee. Yet, Christian, thou hast reason, if I mistake not, to bless God, if he suffers thy enemies so far to open his mind, by which thou mayest have some light to discover the wickedness of his design, and the other temptation of questioning the sincerity. Dost thou not now perceive, poor soul, what made the loud cry of thy hypocrisy in thy ears? The devil did not like to see thee so busy with ordinances, nor thy acquaintance to grow so fast with God in them, and he knew no way but this to knock thee off. Bite at his other baits, thou wouldest not. Sin, though never so well cooked and garnished, is not a dish for thy tooth, he sees, and therefore either he must frighten thee with these by troubling thy imagination with fears of thy hypocrisy in them, or else he may throw his cap at thee and give thee for one got out of his reach. Dost thou think, poor soul, that if thy heart were so false and hypocritical in thy duties that he would make all this bustle about them? He does not use to misplace his batteries thus, to mount them where there is no enemy to offend him. Thy hypocritical prayers and hearing would hurt him no more than if none at all. Neither doth he use to be so kind as to tell hypocrites of the falseness of their hearts. This is the chain with which he hath them by the foot, and in his great care to hide it from them, lest the rattling of it in their conscience awaken them to some endeavor to knock it off, and so they make an escape out of his prison. B. Be therefore of good comfort, poor soul, if thy conscience brings not scripture proof to condemn thee for a hypocrite. Fear not the devil's charge. He shall not be on the bench when thou comest to be tried for thy life, nor his testimony of any value at that day, when why they then should his tongue be any slander to thee now. Section 3, number 3. Neglect no means for the getting thy truth of heart and sincerity in evidence to thee. It is to be had. This is the white stone with the new name in it, which no man knoweth but he that receiveth it, saith Revelations 2:17. And I hope thou dost not think this to be such an imaginary thing as the philosopher's stone is, which none ever could say to this day that he had it in his hand. Holy Paul, he had this white stone, sparkling in his conscience more gloriously than all the precious stones in Aaron's breastplate, 2 Corinthians 1:12. Our rejoicing is this, testimony of our conscience, that in simplicity and godly sincerity we have had our conversation in the world. And Job, sure, was not without it, when he does with such a confidence appeal to the thoughts that God himself had of him, even then when God was ransacking and searching every corner of his heart by his heavy hand, Job 10:7. Thou knowest that I am not wicked. Mark, he doth not deny he had sin in him, that you have again and again confessed by him, but that he was not wicked, an example, a rotten-hearted hypocrite. This he will stand to, that God himself will not say so of him, though, for his trial, the Lord gives way to have him searched, to stop the devil's mouth, and shame him, who is not afraid to lay suspicion of this spiritual felony to his charge. Object. But maybe thou wilt say, these were saints of the highest form, and though they might come to see the sincerity and have their white stone in their bosoms, yet such jewels cannot be expected to be worn by ordinary Christians. Answer. For answer to this, consider the weakest Christian in God's family hath the same witness in him that those had, 1 John 5:10. He that believeth in the Son of God hath the witness in him. Mark. It is indefinite, everyone that believeth, not this eminent Christian or that, but everyone. The witness, the same Christ and Spirit dwell in thy heart, that do in the highest saints on earth the same blood thou hast sprinkled, and the same water. To wash these can and will, when the Lord pleases, testify as much for thy grace and sincerity as it doth for theirs. Only as witnesses that are in a court stay till the judge call them forth, then, and not till then, do they give their testimony. So do these, and God may, and doth use his liberty, when he will do this, as, on the contrary, every wicked and penitent sinner carries a witness in his own bosom that will condemn him. But this doth not always speak, and presently make report of the sad news it hath to tell the sinner. That is, when God calls a court and keeps his private sessions in the sinner's soul, which is at his pleasure to appoint the time. Only means must not be neglected, or which I shall propose a few. Number 1. Reach forth, Christian, for such I must call thee, whether thou wilt own the name or no, to further graces, degrees of graces. The more the child grows up, the more it comes to its right complexion, and so doth grace. There is so much savage fear, selfishness with other imperfections at present, like so much scruff on the face of this newborn babe of grace, that they do hide its true favor, which by degrees will wear off as it grows up. Yea, the spiritual reason of a Christian ripens as the whole body of grace grows, whereby he is more capable by reflecting on his own actions to judge the objections Satan makes against his sincerity. So that if you would not be always tossed to and fro with your own fluctuating thoughts, whether sincere or not, be not always children in grace, but grow up into higher stature. And thou wilt grow above many of thy fears, for by the same light thou that findest the growth of any grace, thou mayest see the truth of it also. That would be hard on the first break of day to know whether it be daylight or nightlight that shines, when you see the light evidently grow and unfold itself, You by that know it to be day. Paint doth not grow on the face fairer than it was, nor do the arms of a child in a picture get strength by standing there months and years. Does thy love, hope, humility, godly sorrow grow more and more poor soul, and yet question what it is, whether true grace or not? This is as marvelous a thing, that thou shouldest not know what thy grace is, and whence as it was, that the Jews should not know who Christ was, when he had made a man, born blind, so clearly. John chapter 9. Number 2, readily embrace any call that God sends thee, by his providence, for giving a proof and experiment of thy sincerity. There are some few advantages that God gives, which, if embraced and improved, a man may come to know more of his own heart and the grace of God therein, than in all his life besides. Now, these advantages do lie wrapped up in those seasons wherein God more eminently calls us forth to deny ourselves for his sake. Be but ready to entertain and faithful to obey that heavenly call, and thou wilt know much of thy heart, partly because grace in such acts comes forth with such glory that as the sun, when it shines in a clear day, it exposes itself more visibly to the eye of the creature, as also because God chooses such seasons as these for to give his testimony to the truth of his children's grace in when they are most eminently exercising of it in this way. When does the master speak kindly to his servant and commend him? But when he takes him most diligent in it, then he saith, well done, good and faithful servant. Maybe some time or other God is calling thee to such an act of self-denial, wherein if thou wilt answer God's call, thou must trample upon some dear enjoyment or other, as credit, estate, maybe a sweet child, a dear wife, yea, maybe thou canst not do the work of God calls thee to, but with hazard to them all, these and more too. Well, friend, be not sick to think of thy great strength, or disquieted at the sight of his providency that now stands at thy door. Dost thou know what errand it comes about, thou wouldest invite it in, and make it as welcome as Abraham did the three angels, whom he feasted in his tent so freely? I will tell thee what God sends it for, and that is to bring thee to a sight of thy sincerity and acquaintance thee with that grace of God in thee, whose face thou hast so long desired to see. This providency brings thee a chariot to allude to Joseph's wagon sent for old Jacob, wherein thou mayest be carried to see that grace alive, whose funeral thou hast so long kept in thy mournful soul. And does not thy spirit revive at the thought of any means whereby thou mayest obtain this? Abraham, he was called to offer up his son, and went about it in earnest. Such a piece of self-denial God could not let pass without some mark of honor. And what is it he gives him? But his testimony to his uprightness. Genesis 22:12. Lay not thy hand upon the lad, for now I know thou fearest me, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thy only son, from me. Why? God knew this before. Yes, because he speaks it, that Abraham may hear and take it from God's mouth that he was sincere. Maybe thou art called to deny thy own education and principles sucked in by it, thy own company, cross the judgment of those thou highest esteem, yea, thy own wisdom and reason, to entertain a truth, or take up a practice merely by the account of the word, which if thou canst do, and that without affection of singularity or a humor of pride blowing thee that way, it is an act of deep self-denial, and goes most cross to the most ingenuous natures, who are afraid of drawing eyes after them by leaving their company to walk in a path alone, yea, very lot of to oppose their judgment to others, more for number and parts that than their own, in a word, who love peace so dearly that they can be willing to pay anything but a sin to purchase it. In these, it must needs be great self-denial, and therefore such as have the greater ground to expect God's evidencing their sincerity to them. He did it to Nathanael, who had all these bars to keep him from coming to Christ and believing on him. Yet he did both, and Christ welcomes him with a high and loud testimony to his uprightness. Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. John 1:47. Maybe again the thing God would have thee deny thyself in is thy wrath and revenge, which is to give thee a fair occasion to do. With the greater demonstration of thy sincerity, he puts thy enemy into thy power and lays him bound, as it were, under thy hand. Yea, so orders it in his providency that thou mayest have thy will on him with little noise, or if it be known, yet the notorious wrongs he hath done thee, and some circumstances in the providency that hath brought him into thy hand, concur to give thee an advantage of putting so handsome a color upon the business that shall apologize for thee in the thoughts of those that hear of it, making them, especially who look not narrowly into the matter, rather observe the justice of God and the enemy's judgment befallen him than thy injustice and sin, who was the instrument to execute it. Now, when the way lies smooth and fair for thee to walk in, and thy own corruption calls thee forth, yea, uses God's name in the matter to make thee more confident, saying to thee, as they to David, 1 Samuel 24, Behold, the day is come, wherein God hath delivered thy enemy into thy hand, that thou mayest do to him as seemeth good in thine eyes. Now, if thou canst withstand the temptation, and instead of avenging thyself upon the person, thy enemy, revenge thyself on thy revenge, thy greater enemy of the two, by paying good into thy adversary's bosom for the evil he hath done thee. And when thou hast done this, canst escape another enemy in thy bosom, I mean pride, so as to come out of the field a humble conqueror, and consecrate a memorial of this victory, not to thy own, but praise to God's name, as Goliath's sword, which was not kept by David at his own home to show what he had done, but in the tabernacle behind the ephod, as a memorial of what God had done by it in David's hand, 1 Samuel 21:9. Thou hast done that which speaks thee sincere, yea, high gratitude in thy this grace, and God will sooner or later let thee know so. David's frame sounds not louder for his victories got in the open field over his slain enemies than it doth for that he got in the cave, though an obscure hole over his own revenge in sparing the life of Saul, in which you have the case in hand every way fitted by the renown of his bloody battles. He got a great name, like unto the name of the great men that are in the earth, 2 Samuel 7:9. But by this noble act of self-denial, he got a name, great like unto the name of those that are famed for their holiness in the Scriptures. And rather than David shall not have the commendation of his peace of self-denial, God will send it to him in the mouth of his very enemy, who cannot hold, though it's by it he proclaims his own shame and wickedness, but he must justify him as a holy righteous man. 1 Samuel 24:17. And he, that is, Saul, said unto David, Thou art more righteous than I. Thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. 3, continue thou to wait upon God in all the ways of his ordinancy, every one in their season. Whenever thou comest to get the comfortable sight of thy sincerity, it is the Spirit of God that must befriend thee in it, or else, like Hagar, thou mayest sit by the well and not find it. Thou mayest round thy field again and again, but not find the treasure hid in it. It is the Spirit of God by which we know the things that are freely given us of God. 1 Corinthians 2:12. Now the Spirit sits in the ordinances as a minister of state in his office. Whether he must resort, if we will have the truth of our graces, that are evidences for heaven sealed to our consciences. Thither go, therefore, yea, there wait. For thou knowest not, as the wise man saith of sowing seed, Ecclesiastes 11:6, whether thy wait on this or that, now or then, shall prosper and be successful to thee for this end. It is enough to confirm, yea, disquiet and comfort thee in thy attendancy, that thou art at the right door, and thou, though thou knockest long and hearest no news of his coming, yet thou canst not stay so long. Like Elon's servants, Judges 3:25, when thou needest to be ashamed. They indeed waited on a dead man and might have stood long enough before he had heard them. But thou on a living God that hears every knock, that givest at heaven's gate with thy prayers and tears, yea, a living God, that all this while he acts the part of a stranger like Joseph to his brethren. Yet it is so big with mercy that he will at last fall on thy neck and ease his heart by owning of thee and of his grace in thee. Lift up thy head then, poor drooping soul, and go with expectation of the thing. But remember thou sitteth not God the time. The sun rises at its own hour, whatever time we set it. And when God shall meet thee in an ordinance, as sometimes, no doubt, Christian, thou findest a heavenly light irradiating and influence quickening thy soul while hearing the word, or maybe on thy knees wrestling with God, this is a sweet advantage and season thou shouldest improve for the satisfying thy soul. As when the sun breaks out, then we run to the dial to know how the day goes, or when, as we are sitting in the dark, one brings a candle into the room, when we bestir ourselves to look for the thing we miss, and soon find what we in vain groped for in the dark. So mayest thou, poor soul, as many of thy dear brethren and sisters before thee have done, know more of thy spiritual state in a few moments at such a time than in many a day when God withdraws. Carefully, therefore, watch for such seasons and improve them. But if God will hide thy treasure from thy sight, comfort thyself with this. God knows thy uprightness. Though wrapped up with thine own eyes, say, as David, Psalms 142, verse 3, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path, and God will deal with thee, not by the false accusations thou bringest in against thyself, as it is to be feared some have suffered at men's hands, but by the testimony which his all-seeing eye will give to thy grace. End of chapter 15, having been read by Peter John Perusis. The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians 6, verse 14b, gird thy loins. Chapter 16, wherein the second reason of the metaphor is open. Why sincerity is set out by the soldier's belt, viz., from the establishing and strengthening nature of this grace, particularly of a preserving strength it hath, from some special seasons wherein the hypocrite falls off. Having dispatched the first reason why sincerity is compared to the soldier's girdle or belt, and discourse of this grace under that notion, we proceed to the second ground or reason of the metaphor, taken from the other use of the soldier's girdle, which is to strengthen his loins and fasten his armor, over which it goes, close to him, whereby he is more able to march and strong to fight. Girding, in scripture phase, imports strength. Psalms 18, verse 39. Thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle. Job 12, 21. He weakeneth the strength of the mighty. In the Hebrew it is, he looseth the girdle. To which use the girdle sincerity doth bear a fit analogy. It is a grace that establishes and strengthens the Christian in his whole course, as on the contrary, hypocrisy weakens and unsettles the heart. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. As it is in bodies, so in souls. Earthly bodies, because mixed, are corruptible, whereas the heavenly bodies, being simple and unmixed, they are not subject to corruption. So much the soul hath of heaven's purity and incorruptibleness, as it hath of sincerity. Grace be with all them that love our Lord Jesus Christ in sincerity, with incorruption, Ephesians 6:24. The strength of every grace lies in the sincerity of it, so that, without any more ado, the point which offers itself to our consideration from this first notion of the girdle is this. Note that sincerity does not only cover all our other infirmities, that is excellent, yea, necessary to establish the soul in and strengthen it for its whole Christian warfare. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Proverbs 11:3. The hypocrite falls shamefully and comes to naught with all his shifts and stratagems to save himself, whereas sincerity carries the soul safe that dares follow its conduct above all dangers, though in the midst of them,
But to open the point, there is a threefold strength sincerity brings with it, which the false hypocritical heart wants. Number one, a preserving strength. Number two, a recovering strength. Number three, a comforting strength. First, sincerity hath a preserving strength to keep the soul from the defilements of sin. When temptation comes on furiously and charges the soul home, a false heart is put to the run and cannot possibly stand. We are told of Israel's hypocrisy, Psalms 68, verse 8. They were a generation that set not their heart aright. And what follows? Whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Stones that are not set right on the foundation cannot stand strong alone. You may see more of this bitter fruit growing on the hypocrite's branches in the same Psalms, verse 56 to 57. They turned back and dealt unfaithfully. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow. When the bow is unbent, the rift it hath made be undiscerned, but go to use it by drawing the arrow to the head, and it flies in pieces. Thus does the false heart when put to the trial. As the ape in the fable, dressed like a man, when nuts are thrown before her, cannot but then disassemble her nature any longer, but shows herself an ape indeed, a false heart, betrays itself before it is aware when a fair occasion is presented for its lust, whereas sincerity keeps the soul pure in the face of temptation. Proverbs 10:8. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely, that is, he treads strong on the ground, like one whose feet are sound. Though stones lay in his way, he goes over them safely. But he that perverteth his way shall be known, like one that hath some corn or other ale about his feet. Though in green, smooth way, he may make a shift to go, yet when he meets with hobbling stony way, he presently goes down and falters. Now, that this preserving strength which sincerity girds the soul with may better appear, it will be requisite to instant in some of those seasons wherein sincerity keeps the soul from the power of temptation. As on the contrary, when hypocrisy cowardly and tamely yields the soul off into its hands. First, a false heart usually starts aside and yields to sin when it can hide itself in a crowd and have store of company under which it may shroud itself. The hypocrite sets his watch, not by the sun, the word, I mean, but by the town clock, what most do, that he will be easily persuaded to do. Therefore, you seldom have him swim against the tide of corrupt times. Light things are carried by the storm, and light spirits by the multitude. But the sincere Christian is massy and weighty. He would sooner sink to the bottom and yield to the fury of the multitude by suffering from them, then float after their example and sinning with them. The hypocrite hath no inward principle to act him, and therefore, like the dead fish, must dive with the current. But sincerity, being the principle of divine life, directs the soul to its way and improves it to walk in it, without the help of company to lean on, yea, against any opposition it meets. Joshua spake what was in his heart when 10 or 12 that were sent with him, perceiving on which side the wind lay, accompanied themselves to the humor of the people. Numbers chapter 14, verse 7. The false prophet's pleasing words, with which they clawed Ahab's proud humor, could by no means be brought to fit good Micaiah's mouth, though he should make himself very ridiculous by choosing to stand alone rather than fall in with so goodly a company, 400 prophets, who were all agreed of their verdict, 1 Kings 20. Secondly, a false heart yields when sin comes with a bribe in its hand. None but Christ, and such as know the truth as it is in Christ, can scorn the devil's offer. All these will I give to thee. The hypocrite, let him be, got a pinnacle high in his profession, yet will make haste down to his prey, if it lies fair before him. One that carries not his reward in his bosom, that counts it not portion enough to have God and enjoy him, may be bought and sold by any huckster to betray his soul, God and all. The hypocrite, when he seems most devout, waits but for a better market, and then he will play the merchant with his profession. There is no more difference between a hypocrite and an apostate than between a green apple and a ripe one. Come a while hence, and you will see him fall rotten ripe from his profession. Judas, a close hypocrite, how soon an open traitor. And as fruit ripens sooner or later as the heat of the year proves, so doth hypocrisy, as the temptation is strong or weak. Some hypocrites go longer before they are discovered than others, because they meet not with such powerful temptations to draw out their corruptions. It is observed that the fruits of the earth ripen more in a week when the sun is in conjunction with the dog star than in a month before, when the hypocrite hath a door open by which he may enter into possession of that worldly prize he hath been projecting to obtain. Now his lust within and the occasion without are in conjunction, and his day hastens wherein he will fall. The hook is baited, and he cannot but nibble at it. Now sincerity preserves the soul in this hour of temptation. David prays, Psalms 26:9, that God would not gather his soul with sinners, whose right hand is full of bribes, such as for advantage, would be bribed into sin, to which wicked gain he opposes himself. Verse 11. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity, where he tells us that what kept him from being corrupted and enticed as they were from God. It was his integrity. A soul walking in its integrity will take bribes neither from men nor sin itself, and therefore he saith in verse 12, his foot stood in an even place, or, as some read it, my foot standeth in righteousness. Thirdly, the hypocrite yields to the temptation, when he may sin without being controlled by man, which falls out in the double case. First, when he may embrace his lust in a secret corner, where the eye of man is not privy to it. Secondly, when the greatness of his place and power lifts him above the stroke of justice, when man's hand in both these, he discovers his baseness. But sincerity preserves his soul in both. First, see how the hypocrite behaves himself when he thinks he is safe from man's sight. Ananias and Sapphira's care was to blind man's eye, but lay in some of their estates at the apostles' feet. And having made sure of this, as they thought, by drawing this curtain of their seeming zeal between it and them, they pocket up the rest without trembling at or thinking of God's revenging eye, looking on them all the while. And boldly, when they have done this, present themselves to Peter, as if they were as good saints as any in the company. The hypocrite stands more of the saving of his credit in this world than the saving of his soul in the other, and therefore, when he can ensure that, he will not stick to venture the putting of the other to the hazard, which shows he is either a flat atheist, or does not believe there is another world to save or damn his soul in, or on purpose stands aloof from the thoughts of it, knowing it is such a melancholy subject, and inconsistent with the way he is in, that he dares not suffer his own conscience to tell him what it thinks of it. And so it comes to pass that it hath no power to awe and sway him, because it cannot be heard to speak for itself. Now, sincerity preserves the soul in this case. It was not enough that Joseph's master was abroad as long as God was present. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Genesis chapter 39, verse 8. Mark, not against his master, but against God. Sincerity makes faithful to man. But for more than man's sake, Joseph served his master with eye service. He had God in his eye when Potiphar had not him in his happy those masters that have any that will serve them with this eye service of sincerity. Secondly, the hypocrite, if he cannot get out of man's sight, yet may he but stand out on the reach of his arm and power, it is as well for his turn, and doth often discover him. How unworthily and cruelly dealt Laban with Jacob, cheating him in his wife, oppressing him in his wages by changing it 10 times. Alas, he knew Jacob was a poor, shiftless creature in a strange place, unable to contest with him, a great man in his country. Some princes who before they have come to their power and greatness, have seemed humbled and courteous, kind and merciful, just and upright. As soon as they have leaped into the saddle, got their reins of government into the hand, began to know what their power was, have even ridden their subjects off their legs with oppression and cruelty, without all mercy to their estates, liberties, and lives. Such instances of history of the world does sadly abound with. Even Nero himself, that played the part of a devil at last, began so, that in his Roman hopes he was hugged for a state saint, set but hypocrite upon the stage of power and greatness, and it will not be long before its mask fall off. The prophet meant thus much when he made only his reply to as ill seeming abhorrency of what he had foretold concerning him. 2 Kings 8:23. The Lord showed me that thou shalt be king over Syria, as if he had said, Hazael, thou never yet didst sit in a king's chair, and knoweth not what a discovery that will make of thy deceitful heart. Mark from whence Rehoboam revolt from God is dated. 2 Chronicles 12:1. It came to pass, when Rehoboam had established the kingdom and had strengthened himself, he forsook the law of the Lord. Policy bade him conceal his intentions, while he had settled himself on his throne, lest he should have hazard his crown. But that set on shore, and his party made strong, now all breaks out, like a false captain, whose vesicles his castle, and furnishes with all kinds of provisions and ammunition, and then, and not till then, declares himself a traitor, when he thinks he is able to defend his treason. But here also sincerity preserves the gracious soul. Two famous instances we have for this. One is Joseph, who had his unnatural brethren that would once have taken away his life, yea, who did that which might have proved worse for all that they knew, barbarously sell him as a slave into a strange land. These he had strangely brought into his hands while he was in his honor and power in Egypt. And now, when he might have paid them in their own coin, without any fear or control from man beyond, this holy man is lift above all thoughts of revenge. He pays their cruelty in his own tears, not in their blood. He weeps over them for joy to see them, that once had no joy till they had rid their hands of him. Yea, when their own guilt made them afraid of his presence, measuring him by their own revengeful hearts, who soon doth he deliver them from all fears of any evil intended by him against them. Yea, he will not allow them to darken the joy which that day had with them brought to him, so much as by expressing their own grief before him, so their own cruelty to him, so perfect a conquest had he got of all revenge. Genesis chapter 45, verse 5. And what preserved him in this hour of great temptation? He told them. Genesis chapter 42, verse 18. This do and live, for I fear God. As if he had said, though you be here at my prisoners, at my will and mercy, for all that you do, can to do to resist, yet I have that which binds my hands and heart too, from doing or thinking you evil. I fear God. This was his preservative. He sincerely feared God. The other instance is Nehemiah, governor of that colony of Jews, which, under the favor of the Persian princes, were again planting their native country. By his place, he had an advantage of repressing his brethren, if he just had been so wicked, and from those that had before him been honored with that office. He had examples of such as could not only swallow the common allowance of the governor without raising in their consciences which showed a digestion strong enough, considering the pale state of the Jews at that time, but could, when themselves had sucked the milk, let their cruel servants suck the blood of this poor people by also by illegal exaction, so that Nehemiah, coming after such oppressors as he had taken his allowance and not eased them of the other burdens which they groaned under, no doubt he might have passed for merciful in their thoughts, but he does not go so far. A man may possibly be an oppressor in exacting his own. Nehemiah knew they were not in case to pay, and therefore he does not require it. But as one who comes after a bad husbandman and hath driven his land and sucked out the heart of it, cast it up fallow for a time, till it recovers its lost strength. So did Nehemiah spare this oppressed people. And what, I pray, was it preserved him from doing, as the rest had done? See Nehemiah 5:15. But I did not so because of the fear of the Lord. The man was honest, and his heart touched with a sincere fear of God, and this kept him aright. End of chapter 16, having been read by Peter John Parisius. The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 14b, gird thy loins. Chapter 17. Of a recovering strength that sincerity hath, and whence. Secondly, sincerity hath a recovering strength with it, when it does not privilege from falling, yet it helps up again, whereas the hypocrite lies where he falls and perisheth where he lies. Who, therefore, is said to fall into mischief? Proverbs chapter 24, verse 16. The sincere soul falls, as a traveler may do, by stumbling at some stone in his path, but gets up and goes on his way with more care and speed. The other falls, as a man from the top of a mast that is engulfed, past all recovering in the devouring sea. He falls, as Haman did before Mordecai. When he begins, he stays not, but falls till he can fall no lower. This we see in Saul, whose heart was never right. When once his naughty heart discovered itself, he tumbled down the hill apace and stopped not, but from that one sin went to a worse. And in a few years you see how far he was got from his first stage, where he first took his leave of God. He that should have told Saul, when he betrayed his distrust and unbelief in not staying the full time for Samuel's coming, which was the first way step taken notice of in his apostasy, that he who now was so hot for the worship of God that he could not stay for the prophet's coming, would ere long quite give it up, yea, full from inquiring of the Lord, to ask counsel of the devil, by seeking to a witch, and from seeking counsel of the devil should, at the last and worst act of his bloody tragedy, with his own hands, turn himself desperately into the devil's mouth, by itself murder. Surely he would have wondered at it more than Hazlitt did as the plain character Elisha gave of him to his face. And surely all the account we can give of it is that his heart was naughty at first, when Samuel on that occasion hinted to him, 1 Samuel 13, when he told him, the Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, David he meant, who afterwards fell into a sin greater as to the matter of the fact than that for which Saul was rejected of God, and yet having but an habitual sincerity as the root of the matter in him, happily recovered out of it, for want of which hypocritical Saul miscarried finally. So true is that proverb that frost and fraud have dirty ends. Now there is a double reason for this recovering strength and sincerity, one taken from the nature of sincerity itself, and the other from the promise by God settled on the soul, where sincerity is found. First, from the nature of sincerity itself. Sincerity is to the soul as the soul is to the body. It is a spark of divine life, kindled in the bosom of the creature by the Spirit of God. It is the seed of God remaining in the saint, 1 John 3:9. Now, as the seed cast into the womb of the earth, and quickening there by the influence of heaven upon it, doth put forth its head, fresh and green in the spring, after many a cold nip it hath had from the winter, so doth sincere grace, after temptations and falls, when God looks out upon it with the beams of exciting grace. But the hypocrite, wanting this inward principle of life, doth not so. He is a Christian by art, not by a new nature, dressed up like a puppet, in the fashion and outward shape of a man, that moves by the jimmers which the workman fastens to it, and not informed by a soul of its own. And therefore, as such an image, when worn by time or broken by violence, can do nothing to renew itself, but crumbles away by piecemeals, till it comes at last to nothing. So doth the hypocrite waste in his profession, without a vital principle to oppose his ruin that is coming upon him. There is great difference between the wool on the sheep's back, which shown will grow again, and the wool on the sheep's skin on a wolf's back. Clip that, and you shall see no more grow in its room. The sincere Christian is the sheep. The hypocrite is the wolf clad in the sheep's skin. The application of it is obvious. Secondly, the sincere soul is under a promise. The promises are restorative. Psalms chapter 19, verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. In Hebrew, restoring the soul, it fetched back the soul to life as a strong cordial one in a fainting fit, which virtue is proper to the promissory part of the word, and therefore so to be taken in this place. Now, the sincere soul is the only rightful heir of the promises. many sweet promises are laid in for the assuring, secure, and auxiliary aid to bring them off in all their dangers and temptations. Proverbs 28:18. Whoso walketh uprightly shall be saved. Now mark the opposition. But he that is perverse shall fall at one. That is, suddenly, irrevocably. Job 8:20. God will not cast away a perfect man, neither will he help the evildoers. He will not take them by the hand, Hebrews. That is, to help them up when they fall. Nay, the hypocrite is not only destitute of a promise for his help, but lies also under a curse from God. Great pains we find him take to rear his house, and when he hath done, leans on it, but it shall not stand. He holds it fast, but it shall not endure. Job 8:15. A little that the righteous hath is better than the riches of many wicked. Proverbs 37:16. But why? See the reason, verse 17. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. The righteous man in that psalm is the upright, but the wicked is meant the hypocrite. A little true grace mixed with much corruption in a sincere Christian is better than the hypocrite's riches. Great faith, zeal, and devotion he brags of, the former hath the blessing of the promise to recover it when decaying. These, the curse of God, threatening to blast them when in their greatest pomp and glory. The hypocrite's doom is to grow worse and worse. 2 Corinthians 2:13. Those very ordinances which are effectual through the blessing of the promise to recover the sincere soul being cursed to the hypocrite give him his bane and ruin. The word which opens the eyes of the one puts out the eyes of the other, as we find in the hypocritical Jews to whom the word was sent to make them blind. Isaiah 6:9-10. It melts and breaks the sincere soul, as in Joash, 2 Kings 22:19. But meeting with a naughty false heart, it hardens exceedingly, as appeared in the same Jews, Jeremiah 62:20. Before the sermon, they spake fair. Whatever God saith, they will do. But when sermon is done, they are further off than ever from complying with the command of God. The hypocrite he hears for the worst, prays for the worst, fasts for the worst. Every ordinance is a wide door to let Satan in more fully to possess him, as Judas found the sop. End of chapter 17. Haven't been read by Peter John Parisis.